TV Campfire Podcast.
Have you seen it yet? OMG.
We're here.
I hate to sound like a broken
record. Oh, no! We're fans.
It just goes up from there.
Oh! All right, we got to a whole different level.
No, you didn't.
We talk TV.
She is the most useless one-dimensional character ever.
Premiere of Spartacus.
Vengeance.
Welcome to the show.
This is podcast number 135, and I am Libby, your host, and this week we have returning guests.
Hi, I'm Tom from Glendale.
Susie from Sherman Oaks. And Allison from Tarzana.
This week in the news, Haven has been renewed for season 4. And that's crickets you hear. And then Beauty and the Beast has been picked up for a full season.
Why?
I don't get that at all.
Because the ratings are mediocre. They're not as bad as the Emily Owens ratings, which are really bad, and that show's not going to make it. This show, I figured was going to get at least a season, and then they might not get picked up after that.
Beauty and the guy with the scar on his face and freaky contact lenses occasionally.
Yeah, the show's... At least it makes me feel better that it's not doing great. Like, Arrow is doing phenomenal ratings.
Arrow's doing really well.
Right, and this show, no. It's doing below Supernatural ratings, which is actually hard to do because Supernatural's ratings are just barely hanging in. This show's doing worse, so that makes me feel better. And the last piece of news I have is Netflix, which is trying to fill up its original programming, for some reason has picked up The Killing, which was canceled by AMC.
They must have bought into Vina Sud's self hype that she was as good a writer as David Chase from Sopranos.
I don't know, but.
That talk about crickets.
Yeah, it's like the show was canceled for a reason. Let it stay
bad.
Yes, let it stay
bad. Yeah, I had a show that wasn't just canceled because it was bad, but because it alienated all of its fans.
Yeah,
pretty much.
Yeah,
yeah. I imagine though it was really cheap, so that's why Netflix picked it up. Bargain bin.
2 for 1. Everything must go.
All right. Anyone else have news?
I have one piece of news. Amazon is now getting into the original series business. They picked up a show called Browsers, which was developed for CBS originally, and it's a single-camera comedy. So that'll be interesting. The networks really should be worried.
So far Netflix, the biggest one that they had Lilyhammer, which was not that big, but the big one, House of Cards, and Arrested Development, when that happens, that's going
to
be huge.
But when Amazon starts, I mean, when everybody's trying to get in your game, when the hottest show demographic-wise on television is not on a major broadcast network but on basic cable, they really need to start, you know, upping their game.
It's not like they've been, like, phoning it in. I think they've been trying.
This fall season was pretty lackluster.
That's true.
I mean,
is true.
They got to do a better job.
All right, let's start with the shows, and first up, we have Homeland. Timer has started, that means speak, people.
Homeland. Carrie, do not trust Brody.
I mean, oh, right, they keep telling her that.
Because she's not going to do it.
Well, I mean, the thing is, it seems like a very simple idea that a logical person would know to follow.
But she's not logical,
no,
she's crazy.
No, right, and... I don't think he knew about the Hit Squad. I don't think he knew it.
I don't know. I don't put anything past him.
I think, you know, what they were talking about was that there was some kind of tell that transpired between him and the reporter. And it was either intentional or unintentional that she picked up that something was going on.
You mean when they were in the hallway talking?
When they were in the hallway talking. Yeah. Because he also got... Now, I don't know that it was necessarily intentional because of the look that he had on his face... When she left, like, oops, so, you know, what just happened? What did she just tell me? So I'm not sure that that was an intentional thing on his part, but I think that she did get some kind of idea of what was going on, or that something was going to happen, and that's why she alerted her group.
Well, also she said that with the CIA investigating the building, that they had to get something out of there. So that might have been completely separate. It might have just been, we need to get that C4 out of there before they find it.
Yeah, but you don't necessarily show up with like your own little SWAT team to do it.
Apparently, you do.
Unless you know that the CIA is there. Yeah.
I was surprised.
They did know they were camped out, but the question is, how did they know they were camped out? That's the question.
Well, there are some theories on the web that there might be a mole.
There has to
inside,
be.
And I'm ambivalent about that because they haven't done that, and that is such a routine
24
play.
No, they did the idea of it in first season.
They
introduced the idea of a mole in season one. They just never resolved that.
Right.
So that mole is obviously still there, but yeah, it does feel like a 21 move.
24.
Sorry, 24 move. But I feel like as long as it's not somebody that we really know well
or care about,
and it's just some random analyst that we've never seen before, I'm fine with it.
Yeah, well, they were dropping like red herrings last year involving Saul, and I think that they've kind of left that alone. I would be really surprised if they picked that up again.
Yeah,
I'm really in the couldn't care anything about this thing with the daughter and the vice president.
Yeah,
right.
I'm like, it just seems like it's like there's so much going on in the main plot line.
Yeah.
That's another bad 24 move.
It is. But I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt and seeing where this is going because it could be interesting. But yeah, right now it's just a distraction. And
well, I'm trying to figure out who they're doing it for, though. Like, it's not obviously for our demographic because none of us give a crap about it. So who are they trying to please?
But I mean, the teenagers are not watching this show.
No, it's on freaking Showtime.
Yeah, but. The one other thing is that's why I think that it might have something that might pay off. Yeah, that it might pay off. The last thing is at the very end of the episode when Carrie bursts into his office and starts going off on him and yelling at him and he's like, "What are you talking about?" I genuinely believe he had no idea what she was talking about. But then her breakdown and crying and then him holding her, I was like, "Wait, what just happened?" Yeah. Like I was so kind of blindsided by that. Like that felt. The way that conversation started, or argument, or accusation started, I didn't understand how she ended up with him holding her. Like, wait, she
is a time bomb. I mean, both of them are time bombs.
That's true.
And their timers are out of sync. But it's just a matter of who's...
But I think it's kind of like a broken watch, though, where, like, twice a day,
they're right.
Because they have that connection. Like, they're both weirdly dependent on each other at the oddest times.
That's true, yeah.
And
there's definitely a connection there. I feel it, but then I just sit back and I kind of like you. Maybe I go, wait, what? Right here? Right now? What?
Yes.
And the fact that he out and out lied to Jessica about who his handler was at the CIA.
Oh, well, yeah.
Of course
he's going to lie. But he lies with such
ease.
Facility.
Yeah,
he lies with such ease. It just rolls off the tongue.
How good a liar he is shown to be. I mean, that has just become endemic to his character, is that, you know, he is a pathological liar.
Yep.
And it's impossible to tell at all when he's being truthful about anything, whether it's about facts or feelings, because he just tells it. It just comes right out.
And he's very sincere with his lies.
He's
really good at it.
Because he's a sociopath.
All right, so, but still, thumbs up, Homeland?
Yes.
Sure.
Oh, all right, next up, let's talk about Dexter. And this week's episode was actually probably the weakest one, I'd say. Generally speaking, Dexter has been really good this season.
Yeah, they kind of coasted through this episode, I think.
Yeah, this was on cruise control, and they did exactly what I knew they were going to do. I was like, please do something to surprise me. And they did not. They... followed the script exactly the way you knew it was going to happen.
You mean in terms of him and her at the end?
Yes. I was like, well, because she, when we talk about her, we're talking about the woman from Chuck, Yvonne, what, I forgot her full name. I forgot her character's name too.
Yvonne Stravosky or whatever.
Yes,
Stravosky.
That's her name. Okay. She was she's obviously a serial killer. He proves that she's been poisoning men since she was a teenager. And he figures out the evidence, he puts it all together, therefore she belongs on his table, but she's hot, so therefore he can't kill her. Come on.
They do it, and of course she's like, of course it's going to turn her on. She was the one that he was about to kill. Of course.
It's just like, and the thing that I liked about Dexter in the first few seasons is human emotion and all that stuff really didn't do anything for him. Yeah. So her being hot wouldn't have mattered to him at all. But the fact that she's kind of a serial killer and hot, and he's a serial killer, and so now they, instead of killing her on his table, he has her naked like he's going to kill her on the table, And then he just, like, rips off all the saran wrap and they just have sex on the table. And I was like, ew.
Well, but think about it, too, though. In the past, there have been, I mean, at every season, you know, the baddie of the season or whatever, it ends up, usually it's a serial killer. And he talks about his dark passenger and how they're very similar. And he's always, you know, musing whether or not his life could have turned out that way, you know, and what makes him different than that person and the moral compass and his sister, you know, all this stuff. So the fact that, yeah, it's like every episode he finally gets the serial killer on the table and ends up, you know, finishing the job. But then with her, and it's so, and it's pretty quick in the season for him to get to that point and to do this too, I think, personally.
Which is why I knew he wasn't going to do it.
Exactly. Me too. And you're right. They put it, they focused that episode so much on getting her to that point, to literally getting her on the table, really, that it seemed almost rushed. It was too easy for him to get all everything. I was surprised everything happened in that one episode, really.
Yeah.
So I agree, the whole thing with her. So now, like, okay, so what's the second half of the season or whatever you want to call it?
The second half is that now Deb, because he started investigating her, that put Deb on her. So now Deb has figured out she's a serial killer and wants to arrest her. But now Dexter's sleeping with her and wants to protect.
So, like, how are they going to play that out?
Yeah, so now he wants to protect her from his sister. And I'm just like, really? Come on. Like, now, because I liked that Deb knew and it changed his behavior and it changed their relationship. That was great. But now you add the girlfriend to it. And it's just like, now it just seems like a cheesy soap opera for some reason. So
it gets him, it gives them an easy way for him to get back on the path of whatever it is that he normally does, because now he has to still evade, he has to go back to evading Deb again, so to speak, you know?
Yeah.
But at least, hey, at least Santiago Cabrera was in it. And he's always hot, so that's good. I'll take him in a show any day.
All right, so this one was sort of a thumb sideways / down-ish. It's first time this season for Dexter. Dexter had been so good. This is like it's so I think that kind of makes the disappointment more. So anyway, next up, let's talk about Once Upon a Time. And this one was Jack and the Beanstalk and the Giant, played by Jorge Garcia.
Yay! Yep.
And I have this. The thing that's a trip is that when he's the giant, he's growling, and I was like, Corey is such a nice guy. I didn't believe him being mean.
No.
So it was just like, he's like, and I was like, he's so cute.
He's a friendly giant.
Take a moment, cuddle him, and call him George.
Yes, exactly. So I just, like, I didn't believe that he was a mean, homicidal giant. It just didn't work, and I'm glad that they only had that going for, like, 5 seconds. And he very quickly became cuddly. And I was like, okay.
Well, you know he had to, because it's the whole thing with Emma, and it's like her superpower is being super awesome and being able to, you know, get to the heart of things. And, you know, when they were going up that beanstalk and everyone's like, it's the last beanstalk, he's the last giant, he's a killer, you're never going to make it back. You knew she was going to tame the beast, so to speak. So,
yeah,
it wasn't too surprising.
No. But I still liked Jorge as the giant. I thought that was still cool.
Is it just me? I did not care for the Emma backstory stuff at all.
Oh, well, the thing that her putting on glasses made her young? Like, really?
I'm younger. I'm wearing glasses. It's the Clark Kent effect.
Oh, my goodness. That was so silly.
But it didn't really... I mean, we knew that she kind of had a sordid past.
No, but the important part... That's not her sordid past isn't the important part. The important part is that the father of, of the kid... No. I forgot the kid's name. The father of the kid is... actually not a bad guy, because the impression we got the whole time
that
he was a jerk and left her pregnant and did something and betrayed her in some way, and we actually got to see the actual betrayal wasn't really a betrayal.
It was masterminded by Pinocchio,
right? And when he comes back,
did you ever think you'd say a sentence like that, by the way? Masterminded by Pinocchio. That doesn't come out every day.
Well, he said it with a lot of sarcasm. So.
We never see what was in the box, right? Or what Pinocchio showed.
No. Yeah, it's, you know, like, we need another MacGuffin on this show.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
But it does call into question, you know, what would have convinced him that magic exists.
Exactly.
If you kind of tend to think, if there's one object, you know, that would make him do that, he's already... a person who would believe that something like that could happen. So who is he really? You know, is this just a fake name he's using the way Pinocchio uses August?
I don't think he's magical.
No, I don't. I think he's a mundane.
Yeah, I think he's just a regular guy.
But I know what Allison's thinking, though, and it's because Because, yeah, they've been saying all this time, you know, you have to believe in magic, you know, for it to really work. And there really wasn't magic in the world. I mean, it just seems weird. I don't know why there was something in that box that was enough to prove, unless Pinocchio had something from the future. Like, I don't understand.
Or
like,
from the enchanted woods.
Them. Yeah. So I'm like, maybe he had Jiminy Cricket in the box. Bah, ha, ha, no.
I mean, really, most people would think, oh, that's some little gimmicky special effect or whatever, if it's, you know, some little glowy thing. Or, but he seemed to recognize specifically
exactly
what that was,
and
that changed
him. Particularly, yeah.
Right, and so that's what makes me think that, you know, I mean, there was a lot of talk that maybe he's going to be Bay.
Oh, yeah.
And it's, you know, that I don't think that's been ruled out.
Did you say bait?
Yeah. No, she said Bay, but
it's
what's Bay?
Balefire.
I don't know who that is.
Who?
I don't
know. Rumpelstiltskin's son.
Oh, that Bay. Right. Yeah. Okay. I could see that. That would just be... That feels incesty
that,
now.
That feels weird.
Yeah, that's what I just said. That just feels like... No.
Well, it's not like Emma's related to Rumpelstiltskin.
I know, but for some reason it still feels... I don't know why.
It makes sense that was attracted to magic in the real world and they don't know why.
Okay. That's a good theory. Huh. I like the actor, even though I'm used to him being evil.
Me too. I'm always afraid of him because of True Blood.
Seriously.
All right. So thumbs up for Once Upon a Time. Next up, we have to talk about Walking Dead.
Woo-wee!
And this was the episode that you could not miss.
Spoiler alert. Oh, seriously, at class the next day, the student's like, don't talk about it! It's like, 3 days later, still don't talk about it! I'm behind!
Oh my goodness, this episode...
It almost made me feel sorry for Lori.
almost! Oh my goodness. If this couldn't do it, nothing could.
Truly, I was not expecting that because I am not conversant with the comic. I know about it, and I know certain points from it. But I don't know the comic specifically, and so I was not expecting what happened. And in fact, I kept thinking to myself, no, they're not going to go there, please. I'm not going to get excited about this. And then they did. It was like, thank you.
Well, I really thought that they were going to just kill the baby. That's what I thought was going to happen.
No.
And they, because I was like, how are they going to have a baby in the middle of this craziness? And so I was like, there's no way they're keeping that baby alive. And then they did the exact opposite of what I thought. So.
One of my friends let it slip mistakenly back in spring that Lori's days were numbered because of the comics.
Yeah.
So I kind of wish that they hadn't but I did want to see her go. So, the way she went was pretty horrific, especially having to be euthanized, you know. Or preventive walkerization by her son. That's cold.
Oh. So if the newborn gets to live and actually grows up, then it's like, hey, big brother, so what happened to mom? Well, I kind of had to kill her when you were born, sorry.
No, so but I think any baby that grows up in this world will totally understand it.
Yeah, that's just, you know, saying, well, it's Tuesday. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Any baby that's growing up in this world is going to be used to zombies, used to people eating people, just like it'll be normal.
And
I think that what it's going to do to Carl, I mean, if he wasn't turning sociopathic already, I think this is kind of the link to that. That really puts...
But you've got to admit, the best scene was at the end. I mean, his...
Rick's breakdown?
Oh, yeah. Ooh. The fact that Carl is standing there just...
Calm.
Like, freaking out, but standing there, holding it together... But yeah, that Rick's just on the ground and gone. It was like, okay, that kind of gave me chills.
Yeah. One other thing we haven't mentioned. What about T-Dog?
T-Dog
love?
Okay. T-Dog, face it. One, his days were numbered to begin with. You just knew he was not going to survive. Once the other black character showed up, it's like, what? One of my friends put on Facebook, it's like, you know, when they found Michonne and the other black dude in prison, it's like, bye-bye, there's too many of y'all around.
There's too many black people on the show. I thought the same thing.
especially at the beginning of the episode when he had like this big moment of being moral where everyone else was being terrible, and I thought, oh, you're so dead.
It's like Dale Jr.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he went out well, I give him that.
Yes, he did. He went out a hero.
Yeah, he went out well. I don't know if I could do that for my friends. But I mean, he was already dead though, so maybe I could. Yeah.
This is true. And the jury's out on whether Carol made it out or not.
I think she did.
I think she did too.
Yeah, especially, you can't count Carol out if you can't count that guy that he threw into a room full of zombies and he survived.
Seriously, seriously.
Yeah, so, yeah, don't count her out.
Did we mention the governor, though?
Oh, well, the governor's... What's weird about this episode is because of what was going on in the prison was so high tension and so good that I did not care what was going on with the governor. Which is weird because last week I really enjoyed that episode. But this week I was just like, come on, let's get back to the prison. Like, I had no patience for the governor storyline. So
I have no idea where that's going.
Well, he's seducing her so that she stays. I don't think he's seducing her because he actually wants to sleep with her.
No.
I think he's doing it so that she stays.
He can cement power. But why does he want them to stay?
If you notice, he wants women, but he does not want men.
Oh.
Yeah. So
this was something that I noticed from the very first shot of the town was, wow, there's a lot of women here. Not a lot of men. Yeah,
right.
They're pretty ones.
Yeah, so it's all about
procreation
and getting
rebuilding society.
Yeah, so he wants the women, and whatever he has to do to keep the women in the village, and then he has his guys are more enforcers,
right.
and thugs who will follow his orders.
Except for the doctor.
Yes.
Well, he needs him.
Yes.
Yes.
Anybody he doesn't need and cannot control gets killed.
I'll be really interested to see when these two storylines converge.
Me too.
Especially when Big Brother catches up with not just Little Brother, but catches up with Sheriff Rick.
But I think what's going to happen is they showed in the preview that Daryl is going for the milk for the baby, and I figure that's what he's going to run into. That's what I figure is going to happen. Because you got to get those storylines together as quickly as possible.
I was going to say Merle has an axe to grind, and it's attached to his right hand arm.
All right, so let's wrap that up. We got two thumbs up.
Way up.
For Walking Dead, this is probably the best one that they've had ever.
So far.
Yeah, this is a fantastic episode. All right, next up, let's talk about Castle. This week's Castle is like... What was the movie? Quest.
Galaxy Quest.
This was like the
Galaxy Quest installment.
Yes, this is the TV version of Galaxy Quest, and it was fantastic.
But you know what? I've even forgotten how many, because as I was watching it, like, you know, the first couple zingers were great, obviously, in the comments. But then just the little ones that kept popping up, you know, by just the shiny, you know, and dropping just little words like this.
Oh, there were little things all through.
The whole thing, yeah. It was like every few minutes there was something else. And I'm sitting there laughing and laughing.
Well, the fact that they got the guy from Eureka, who plays Stark, to play the smarmy captain of the ship was fantastic.
and he was great at it.
I know, it was perfect casting.
Ed Quinn.
Yeah. Perfect casting.
Without the facial hair.
Yeah.
He looked like a young Michael O'Hare.
What I was able to learn from the episode was that Nathan Fillion does a fantastic William Shatner.
He does, but he does an awful Patrick Stewart.
That's true.
So I was like, don't do the Patrick.
The story itself was actually kind of cute with her, you know, the part about her being a fan, like a closet fan all those years. And then basically coming out and telling him, she's like, well, what's wrong with it? Yeah, it was cheesy. And this whole joke, the inside joke with Firefly and the fact that it was only on for like 9 episodes and canceled, but the fans still love it. And, you know, this whole thing. And so the fact that I was like, she's like me when I was, you know, young growing up and liked Star Trek Next Generation and, you know, Ensign Ro and stuff. I'm like, you know, she liked the character and she admitted it. She's like, it wasn't the actress, it was the character. And I really liked it at the time. And so I thought they did a really good job of explaining her point of view as a fan.
Right.
In the face of the usual, you know, discriminating and diversions that we usually get as fans.
But the thing is, Castle is a fan, but it's kind of that fan snobbery that you come across,
exactly.
Too. Yeah.
Which we all run against, you know, or across. At least I know I do when I go to Comic-Con. so I like how they handled it from both sides.
Yeah. It was a really good episode. I mean, the fact that someone invented a laser, a real laser.
Oh, Armin Shimmerman, no less.
Perfect.
Yeah. Oh, did you guys catch Jonathan Frakes? His cameo?
Yeah, I didn't catch his cameo, but he directed it.
He cameoed. He was the guy that was getting the autograph in the opening scene. He was getting Castle's autograph, and he was wearing the shirt, I Love Richard Castle.
I missed that.
And he was a total geek boy. And he was like, yes, thank you, Mr. Castle. He does a little giggle. And I was like, oh, that's awesome.
I think my favorite moment is when is when Castle runs into Alexis.
Oh, she's dressed up like Princess Leia or something?
And he's horrified. And then Beckett calls on. It's like, wait a minute. You were just asking me to get in something very similar to what she's wearing.
And he was like, yes, don't make my brain melt.
I kind of want to see Nebula 9 now. It sounds like kind of an interesting show.
That's a web series somebody's going to make.
I hope so.
That was a pretty good show. I think it just made me happy. Like, the whole episode just made me smile. Especially if you're a geek. If you're not a geek, I don't know if you're going to get as much enjoyment out of it. Because there are a lot of inside jokes. So, you non-geek people out there, I'm not sure what you'll think. Let me know. But the rest of us loved it. Alright, yep. Thumbs up. Next up, I was going to talk about Revolution apparently by myself. For just a really, because none of you guys don't share the love. The only thing I wanted to say is that this episode really cemented the fact that the girl, Charlie, they have really, the arc that I was hoping was going to happen for her character is really happening. Like, they have her really changing. She is nothing like she was in the pilot. She's a much hardened character to the point where Miles is like, holy crap. And she actually volunteers to do really dangerous missions and pulls them off. You know? Being out in the real world and being surrounded by danger has changed her a great deal, but it also has made her understand the stakes. So I now like Charlie. I don't believe... Well, I was hoping I would say that at some point. And so I'm glad that I'm actually saying that. And something really detrimental happened to her, which is weird. Like, because the whole thing about the militia, I know you guys have seen the pilot, right? All the militia people have the tattoo, or not tattoo, the brand for, what is his,
That guy, yeah.
Begins with the M. Monroe, thank you.
Okay.
She ended up trying to infiltrate their training facility to rescue a bunch of kids. Because apparently the way they recruit is they kidnap children. They kidnap you, put you on this boat, beat the crap out of you to indoctrinate you, and then everybody gets the brand or whatever. And I figured she was going to escape or whatever, but no, she gets branded. So she ends up with the Monroe brand, and I was surprised they had her just screaming and everything. And I was like, my one thought was, though, I was like, huh, that could be useful. Because now she's got the brand, so she could now do more infiltrating or whatever. Except the problem is when people check to see if they can trust you, they check and see if you have a brand. So that's going to work against her and for her, I think. But it was a weird kind of children's episode. They run across a bunch of orphans, and they find out that their parents got killed by militia soldiers, and they hid out. And so all the kids are basically raising each other, but the oldest kid gets taken to be recruited, and they go to rescue him so that the kids aren't by themselves. The only thing I call foul on is there was a bunch of little kids, and they just, in theory, kind of left them. I was like, wow, okay. But good episode. The only other thing is the mom story about they find more out about how to turn on the electricity with the necklaces. So it was pretty good. Like I liked the flashbacks. I liked all of it. So thumbs up for Revolution for me. All right, next up, let's talk about Modern Family.
I thought this was one of the best episodes they've had this season.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a bold statement.
No, I thought all the subplots worked really well. I mean, they were organically intertwined. The fact that Haley that she got kicked out of school for her misadventures, and they told her you can reapply next year. And
well,
so
at least they'll let her back in.
Well, she has to reapply.
Yeah, but I know, but it's kind of
but
like,
I just thought that I mean between you had the Dunphy and then Cameron and Mitchell, because they were so intertwined with him watching the kids while Mitchell goes off with them. And the thing with Shelley Long coming back, which thankfully funny. They're using her sparingly, but they put the twist on it because Jay's like trying to keep them away.
And the twist is now they bonded
because she too revels in the fact that the trophy wife is going to become huge with this baby. And then exacerbating her...
Well, now she's not a trophy wife. Now she's actually having kids, and now she's actually a wife-wife, is basically how she sees it.
And they can sympathize with the fact that apparently Jay doesn't do anything in terms of being a helpful father.
Well, he didn't back in the day.
He didn't, but he explained why. And I think his explanation was pretty good.
It was, but it gave them something to bond over, though.
Right.
So it was cute. But still, I have to say, I was very impressed, and I actually watched that little part twice because I was very impressed with it. But way to go, Phil Dunphy, for being a dad. Like, when he totally, like, writes up Hannah, or sorry, Haley.
Oh, he goes off on her?
When he goes off on her.
Well, though, you get the impression that he only did it because he was hungry.
Exactly, but that was what was so great about it. And the look on her face in the background, you know, Claire's face about, you know, kind of watching him transform and do that. And it was because he was so tired and grumpy. It was like, but it was good, though, because you're like, there has to be some reason why the kids haven't died yet. And it's like, okay. Somehow have some semblance of being a decent father to some extent. And it was just really, it was really cool to see him, like, actually be that way. And he storms out, and she's after him. And Haley's like, where are you going? She's like, to buy that man some waffles. Yay. So I thought that was actually very cool. So, yeah, I agree. I think it actually was a pretty strong episode.
My nitpick overall, and I was reading what a friend of mine posted on Facebook. They really need to start making the Mitchell... Yes, Mitchell and Cameron can be played for laughs, but they're starting to kind of really rely on stereotypes, especially on behalf of Cameron. And it's not real, it's not fair, and it's starting to get a little old. Yes, he's won a couple of Emmys playing the role, but they're just making him just make the character a little bit deeper instead of so cliched.
Right.
I don't know. I really like the relationship because this week it was he was trying to prove himself to Claire, and apparently he didn't need to, but he didn't know that he was his own insecurities, and it was all, I thought that was all pretty good, and I thought that what's this the youngest daughter,
Alex
thinking that she could go off and be an intern at a hospital and then she passes out during surgery was fantastic. Like all, and it was just because he wasn't paying attention to her because she's supposed to be the adult one and she's off doing stuff she's not supposed to do. So it's all, it was, I thought it was good. I didn't mind it. All right. Wrapping that one up. So thumbs up, Modern Family. Next up, let's talk about Supernatural.
Well, at least there was Garth, and I liked him in this.
I like that they toned him down.
Yeah, he's the new Bobby.
Yeah.
Bobby in training.
This season is so wildly uneven, and the fact that the A-plot played like a retread of Warehouse 13 with the haunted artifact, I'm just
They didn't use goo.
So they didn't use goo.
The haunted penny.
I just thought, the Sam stuff. I want to smack whomever.
Honey, I gave
stop.
Up on Sam stuff.
Enough. Stop.
I'm fast forwarding through it now. I don't even watch
the
Sam stuff.
I totally did too. I fast forwarded through the first one, and then they started talking. And then I saw some of what they talked about in the second one. I was like, oh, I guess something semi important happened in the first one. But not really. It basically is that they have a bond over their dead relatives, except that Dean's not dead. And I'm just like, make it stop.
And it's horrible. It's terrible. It's painful to sit through. And I didn't fast forward it just for the same reason, Libya, that you did, that maybe, just maybe, they might say something that was important to the storyline.
Right.
And then I just hated myself for having done it because, no, they didn't. I just wasted my time.
Well, the only thing about the penny, the haunted penny, was about halfway through the episode, I realized one of the brothers was going to end up with the penny. Because they both have grudges.
Of course they do.
And I was like, oh, this is that thing where they actually are honest with each other for the first time ever because they actually do something. And so I thought Dean was correct in his issues, why he had a grudge. But I did semi-agree with Sam where he was kind of like, either get over it and don't talk about it anymore, or we just stop working together. It's like, those are your choices.
But here's my problem. They've been playing the same beats of this for the entire season, and I'm bored with it.
Well, that's why they said they're done.
But this is like the, fourth or fifth episode of the season, and we've done it every... They should have done this earlier, not now. It's like, come on.
Well, that's
on.
Why it's a grudge. It didn't bother me. That didn't bother me. But
it bothered me.
What bothers me a lot is Sam is... They've made Sam so unsympathetic that it's not even... I think it's almost back to when he was evil, when he was actually using his powers for evil and was going to become Lucifer, was probably the last time where I felt this angry and this.
I like that Sam much better than this Sam.
This Sam, it's like,
well, because that Sam was interesting.
Well, the problem I have also is at the end of the episode, he goes, "Well, what if I'm the hunter that goes up against Benny? What are you going to do then?" And I'm like, "Seriously, seriously." Like, he basically said he's going to go after Benny, and I'm like, "Are you going to go after Benny deliberately?" Like, because I think that's a bad idea because the look on Dean's face is like, "You're not going to like the choice I make," you know. Because Benny hasn't betrayed him. And how many times has Sam betrayed him? It's pretty large, actually.
I tell you, they better kick it up a notch for these last bunch of episodes or I'm going to be out by the
well,
end of this
next
year.
Tomorrow, or not tomorrow, this coming up week is Castiel returns.
Yeah, Castiel returns.
So whatever they do, I'm going to be happy, pretty much. So
no, I'm my trust factor with this writing staff is very low.
I disagree. I think that anything dealing with Purgatory has been fantastic.
Yep.
I think the story with Benny has been fantastic. And you have Castiel, I'm happy. I just think that they're just misfiring on Sam for some reason. I don't understand. I think the only thing is, the way the writing works is they would have done the first 6 or 7 episodes before they got any feedback. So we have to ride this out until people can tell them this is not working. And then they can fix it. Like, because that's the problem is they start shooting the episodes in, like, July.
Yeah, but and if they do fix it, that's the thing.
Well, I don't know if they're going to fix it, though.
Well, we don't know yet. That's what I'm saying. We don't know.
Just as Tom said, this whole season has been so uneven and so scattershot. It's like almost every other episode has been good, and every other episode has been, like,
bad.
I've just wasted abysmal. An hour of my life.
Well, like I said, nobody, you can't take my shine off of Castiel coming back next week. I'm happy
okay,
about
well,
that.
I agree with you there.
Okay, yeah. Thank you. All right, so next up, let's talk about Arrow. And this week's like is better. Yeah. This week's episode, I like the fact that they dealt with the whole, he's been arrested, we think he's the Arrow.
The fact that he set himself up.
Yes, he set himself up and he was like, I knew they were going to eventually think that it might be me, so I decided to eliminate myself. And I was like, all right, because he took that under control. So he did it in a situation where he could control it. Though I do agree with Diggs where he felt like he got played. And he was like, yeah.
Well, he did.
Yeah.
He trusted him, I think, 100% at that point yet. Maybe when he was planning it all.
Right.
But
that's
my
take on it.
But I like the fact that they're dealing with... It's because we're seeing this pretty much since the beginning. It's not something that you're having to bring a lot of backstory to. They're giving it to you. I like the fact that he does tend to use people to get what he wants. And that people catch him and say, if you do that again, we're done.
Right.
And the fact that he totally blew it with Laurel because she figured out we went to that museum as kids.
Oh, yeah.
You totally beat the lie detector, so you are totally lying about other stuff.
Right.
And that's going to have ramifications.
Yeah.
Right.
And the flashbacks, again, are good. They're well...
Oh, right.
That, this, these are well-paced, and they deliver just the right exposition for that moment. Right.
Seriously.
Even actor could take a page from that, actually.
Totally.
Everybody could take a page for, you know, how to use flashbacks. Because I am equally invested in the flashbacks as the present-day story.
Yes.
And the connections are so strong. It's not just, oh, we got to get this piece of information out. There's some real drama and intrigue, plus Deathstroke. Hello?
Yeah. At the beginning, we all thought, oh, he was alone on the island. Then we find out, no, there's at least this one other person on the island. And it's like, we're learning, yeah, there's like, there is this whole other series on the island, you know, going on back there. And we just keep getting glimpses of it. And it's like, now there's, you know, who is this mysterious, you know, I don't know, what do we want to call him? Some sort of
he's a team leader, general,
yeah,
whatever.
Like this mercenary leader guy on this island.
Mercenary is probably a good
idea. Yeah, they probably are mercenaries, yeah.
It's just so cool, because now who is this guy that they were wanting to find and tortured him to find? Because now that adds another level of mystery to his, quote, savior, you know? So, yeah, just each week there's more and more with the backstory that's just as interesting as the current story.
And I'm starting to wonder, it's been easy to, you know, the mother obviously is not completely... you know, guilt-free.
No.
But apparently, it doesn't... it looks... They kind of imply that she put the hit on her husband.
But I don't think so.
But now it's apparent... It seems like she did not.
Right.
But did Barrowman and his well-dressed self do
it? Yeah, I think he did it. But what... And I think the reason that she kidnapped her son in the pilot was not because she was super evil. Is she wanted to prove that he didn't know anything, so well-dressed man would leave him alone. So it was more... to protect him. She actually, because I was like, what mother would do that? But I was like, oh, she's doing that because she can report back to him, my son is innocent, he doesn't know anything.
He doesn't have the list.
Yeah, he doesn't have the list, you don't have to kill him. And the thing that was interesting is she has that scene where she threatens him,
because
she's like, I'm not going to take you going against me and mine anymore, I'm going to come after you if you do such and such. And the look on his face is kind of like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, go for it, babe.
I know. He was totally unimpressed by her threat. And I was like, you have to threaten better. You have to work on that. But
it's interesting that, you know, the stepdad took off.
Yeah, that is weird. I was like, oh, he must have another gig. That's what I was thinking.
No, well.
Because that actor's in a lot of stuff.
I did notice that. I think he does, because when I was reading in Wiki, like the first, I think it was IMDb, like the first or second episode that aired. I was reading it and I saw it and I made the mistake of finding out that he was only in it for like 8 episodes or something. I'm like, oh,
oh really?
Okay. Yeah. So yeah. Maybe that was his exit. Like, okay,
that's a shame. Bye, Dr. Moon.
I think he's going to come back.
Oh, I'm sure he'll be back.
Like maybe a couple more, because I don't think that was 8 episodes yet. So
no, it wasn't.
No, but I also think that he's a pretty big British actor. So I'm feeling like... the role of a husband who doesn't get to do much on this show, he doesn't get any action scenes, he doesn't get any really big stuff, so he might just be like, okay, if I'm not a series regular, I'll come in and out of the show so I can do other stuff.
Oh, and it was good to see Diggs in the arrow costume.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Except I noticed he didn't even bring the bow and arrow, because he's like, I don't do that. I don't shoot anything. Yeah. So he
why bother?
Yeah. To shoot an arrow.
Yeah, so he just showed up and beat the crap out of people.
I love him as a character, actually. I like him better than the arrow. You know,
he's a more seasoned actor is the thing. And so
and it shows.
Yeah, it does. And I like him a lot. So, but I think that actually, now that you're going to have a lot more scenes with the two of them, they've now got this bond where they're going to work together and they're now friends. I feel like that just makes the show stronger and it hopefully will make the other guy, I mean, he's not a bad actor, but he's not as seasoned. And I think
he's a CW actor.
Yeah.
He depends a lot on being
pretty.
Pretty
boy.
Yeah, but he's got an intensity that most of the CW actors don't have. So I give him that. I give him the intensity.
And he's done other stuff, too. He was on Hung the final season on HBO.
Yeah. I saw another season he did, another series he did, which I can't talk about on this show because it's not exactly PG.
Oh.
Okay. It was a TV series.
Less PG than Hung?
Yes.
Oh, jeez.
Yes. I'll tell you off. Look, all you people who are curious, look him up on IMDb because the reason I found the series was after I saw the pilot of Arrow, I wanted to see a still of him shirtless, so I looked him up. I looked up the guy's name and just shirtless, and then I saw...
and got more than
I got
what
more
you
than I anticipated. So,
my.
Yeah. Yes. So he's on another series. Go look it up. now I'm intrigued.
Everybody's going to IMDb. Yeah.
What page do you think I'm on right now?
All right, so let's wrap that one up. I think we all agree the Arrow was really good this week. Yes?
And yes.
No one's talking. Everyone is on their computer.
What? What was that you said?
All right, next up, let's talk about Last Resort. And this week's episode, I was afraid when I saw the previews. I was like, are we doing the crazy one already? Like, that seems early. But... yeah,
are we doing the naked now?
I thought that was a little early, but it makes sense in regards to the military trying to take the sub back. Like they've tried negotiation, they've tried sending in a SEAL team. So this thing where they knock everybody out, I was like, oh, that kind of makes sense. So I'm not like once I understood what was happening, I was like, okay, it sort of makes sense.
I'm really.
It also opens up an interesting question too. You know, when we see Andre Brower lying there with a hypodermic needle
in his chest,
you have to, you have to wonder, you know, who did that? And now there's the possibility there may be a mole.
There may be. There's absolutely one.
They've already tipped in the preview that, I don't know if this is true, but they're claiming that every nuclear sub has an undercover CIA officer
among the
crew.
Oh, that sort of makes sense. Except that they decided that instead of letting everyone in the crew die from suffocation, to actually turn the air back on, fix the fire, but hey, couldn't pass up the chance to take that key.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's...
that's big.
That, well, yeah.
So now they're like, okay, we've got to find the key. And I'm like, yeah, how are you going to find that on a sub? There's so many places to hide it. So that's going to be interesting. So I think the storyline this week was really pretty good. And I did know when they were doing the flashbacks with the XO and he's kissing his wife, I was like, oh, he's kissing the French lady. Like, I thought that because of what she was saying wasn't making sense to his delusion. Mm-hmm. You know, so I was like, oh, he's not kissing his wife, he's kissing her. So then when they show it, I was like, all right. And I don't understand why she was smiling, because I'm like, you understand he was hallucinating, right? So why are
you?
Yeah,
she'll get what she can take, or she'll take what she can get. I'm over the warlord dude.
I am too. I thought
seriously
I was really
over
that,
the war. It's
I was
like
hoping.
Somebody take him out.
I was really hoping they would kill him, but they're trying to make him redeeming because he likes the French lady and he didn't want her to die.
But still, he just works my nerves.
He does. He does. He's not a good actor, and it's just like...
that's the thing that bothers me the most. It's like, you're a terrible actor, and keep your shirt on.
Yeah, he bothers me too.
Unfortunately, I think he's going to be here for the long haul. You know, I get that feeling with his character.
Yeah. Hopefully the show will be here for the long haul. The ratings have been mediocre.
Yeah, okay. they've been fairly tepid. Yeah. Hopefully, once Private Practice goes away, they'll reshuffle their schedule, so it might get another nod.
Hopefully, nice. I think it's a good show. I think it's really good, but
it is. I mean, the critics, it was one of their top picks for the year, but you know, overall, this season has been so underwhelming. People aren't sampling the new shows unless they're on CBS or you know, After the Voice.
Hey, Revolution's awesome. All right.
Keep telling yourself that.
I will, because it's been getting... Until you see what I've been seeing, you cannot comment. All right, next up, let's talk about Person of Interest. And this was the kind of fun episode of the season.
Suburbia.
Yeah.
I love...
stuck in suburban hell.
I love that they're introducing a lot more humor this year than last year.
Yeah,
because it's... I mean, they're writing it well, they're playing it well, and it adds an extra wrinkle that keeps it from being just another CBS procedural with a twist.
Yeah. Well, I think also Reese's deadpan humor really kind of works, because he does a lot with just a raised eyebrow or the really gravelly tone. The only thing that's weird is I think he talked more in this episode than he has like all season. And it was weird because you could tell, because that's not Jim. I don't think it's Jim Caviezel's real voice, like the depth of it or whatever, and the graveliness. So he was really kind of struggling to do all the dialogue this week. There was just a lot of it for him. He had to talk a lot more than normal, so... so it made me laugh.
Perfect choice for him to be with Zoe.
Oh.
Yeah.
Like, if anybody was going to be a couple and be able to like, handle each other, it's them.
What was great is his proposal. He's like, the look on her face was fantastic.
Will you be my wife?
Yeah, she had this moment where she's like, wait, is this, wait, what?
They already have the dog, so that was perfect.
Yes.
So yeah, that whole thing worked out well. And then, of course, being able to do the surveillance on the house. Well, hey, that's what this team is made for, surveillance. So that worked out easily. And I liked the Harold theme too, like the B story with Harold. And when Finch was working on the, you know, showing Nathan how the machine was working and how the machine was figuring out that Nathan basically cheated on his wife, and then kept showing Finch Grace. And he was like, well, what's so crazy about this woman? Nope, she, you know, there's nothing wrong with her, but why does she keep showing up? And everyone, you know, everyone's screaming at their TV, because the machine is hooking you.
I said that too. I was like, the machine is trying to get him laid. It's awesome. Yeah.
And it's his real life wife.
I think that's the biggest takeaway, is that the machine is a yenta. That is its true calling in life.
Well, the thing is, it knows Harold, and it looked at this woman and was like, these two are perfect together because they have so many things in common, and they keep running into each other. He's like, get a clue, Harold. This is what I'm trying to show you. Like, I thought that was great. The machine is worried about his welfare and wants him to be happy. So I was like, aw, good machine. Good.
And that's his real life wife.
I know. Because you said that before when we met Grace. You're before. Right. Sorry.
I want to see Carter and Zoe do a mission together.
That was interesting. Because they had that moment where they meet. And she's like, yeah, I'm John's wife. And she was like, say what now? And that was interesting. I think they would get along. I think they would.
I think it'd be fun to kind of have, you know, not that the women haven't been saving the day, but it would be kind of cool just to see them kicking butt together.
Yeah.
They totally have the resources to get the job done, those two.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure if I like her bangs, though. It's a new hairstyle.
Who, Carter's?
Yeah, Carter got a new hairstyle. She went with the full bangs. I'm like, I don't know if I like it.
Yeah, she had her in a ponytail like the entire episode, which was odd, but okay.
Well, maybe, I mean, because she wanted to show off the new bangs. Which,
I guess. To really show them off.
Yeah, it's just like, I don't know. Actually, the fact that was the biggest issue I had with her this week was the fact that she has bangs on.
Yeah, what did that tell you? Yeah,
yes, exactly. But I love
it's
Carter.
The important things, you know, get your hair. Right, bangs. She can't be on the show.
Carter's like awesome. I love Carter, so that's fine. There was no Fosco this week.
Fosco?
No Fosco.
I didn't miss him, though.
I did realize he wasn't there. Like, when he gave Carter a mission, he's like, Carter, I need you to do such and such. And I was like, where's Fosco?
Yeah.
So.
No, he definitely, it's like, if all four of them aren't in it, the four main, it's like, yeah, it does feel like something's off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, but thumbs up for this week.
Absolutely.
I really enjoyed this. Oh! Forgot to mention poker.
Oh,
their poker game was pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There was some interesting tension in that scene.
Yes.
I love the modern day that we can show that somebody has been smoking, but we don't identify who was and what it was. Because there was something, there was an ashtray, and then there was an object that was emanating smoke on the poker table.
Oh, no, they showed her smoking. Zoe was smoking. Yeah.
Okay, I must have missed that shot.
Yeah, she was holding a cigar. So.
And
yeah.
So was Zoe. Both of them were smoking cigars, so that wasn't a mystery.
Okay, I see, corrected.
All right, so next up, let's talk about Vampire Diaries.
Woo-wee!
This one was great. I like the idea, and I like the idea of the vampire hunter taking all the humans hostage to see what vampires come to rescue them. But there's an error in that logic, because if vampires are super evil, why would they care about a human to come rescue them? So that's kind of an error in his own logic about vampires, you know? But I still like that. And then in the middle of that, he's still trying to train Jeremy. He's still like, even though Jeremy's not working with him, he's still like, okay, so this is what a hunter does, and this is how you do this, and this is how, and by the way, I've put you in a booby trap. Like, it's, what?
It's almost as if he realized he might not have gotten out of that alive, just in case.
Right.
Which
is how what happened.
But for me, this is at least the second example on this series that whether she's human or a vampire, nobody puts Elena Gilbert in the corner. Do not leave her in the dark. Do not be trying to protect her and keep.
Yeah, it's always a bad idea.
And have all these wonderful strategies without her, because she will do what she wants to do, whether you want her to or not. And she totally blew Klaus's plan to hell.
Yeah, she did, and it was great. Well, of course, now we know that Jeremy's the backup plan, but nobody else knows that yet. No, maybe Klaus does know that. But he won't have nowhere to confirm it because Jeremy's the only one who could see the tattoos. Anyway, so of course she's like, I have no idea what this thing is on my hand, you know? But I did like the fact that the brothers, like Damon, realized that Stefan was lying. He was like, dude, you're lying. You're lying about this. You're lying. And he's like, there's only a couple explanations. So until you stop lying, I'm going to rip your heart out of your chest. And so he totally spilled. He was like, this is a secret. And so they decide to work together. And 5 seconds later, the dude's dead because Elena killed him. I started laughing hysterically. I was like, that is hilarious.
Oh.
But then here she guilted and sad. And the best thing is at the end where...
She's freaking out.
No, where Damon basically talks to Stefan and is like, so you're so bent on this because you can't love Elena as a vampire. And he said, just so we're clear, I'll take her either way. He's like, just so there's no misunderstanding. I'm cool with her anyway, so I'm helping you out, but, you know, I have no investment in this. What'd you guys think?
I agreed with Damon, and essentially when Elena killed the vampire at the hunter, at the end, I just kind of went, well, there you go, guys. That's your girl for you. She messed up the one thing you could have done for her. And I'm like, I don't know what this show is trying to do. And so, I don't know. I didn't think it was a very great episode, actually. So, that's why I haven't really said much. I'm like, okay. It annoyed me for some reason.
Well, the thing is, that's the thing about Vampire Diaries is that you don't know what they're trying to do a lot of times. And that's what makes it interesting is they surprise you. And I like that about it, so. But that's your purview that you do not.
Exactly, yes.
All right. Next up, let's talk about Grimm.
Yay. Okay, good. They brought in the Wendigo, which I thought was very interesting.
That was weird.
We learned that from Supernatural in the first season.
Yes, I thought so too. I was like, hey.
Be educational.
I know, right?
The more you know. Bum, 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 bum.
So I thought that was actually kind of cool. I'm like, ooh, I already know about the Wendigo, yay. So I liked that that was the monster of the week, if you will, the Vessin of the week. I think the whole idea of Hank and like going back to, you know, him, now that he knows, you know, that there are Vessin and what they actually are, which are human looking for the most part, but these sort of monsters inside, if you will. I liked that they said, okay, well, this is a good point. So what would happen if in the past there had been other instances where Wesson were involved in crimes and nobody knew because there was no Grimm there at the time or nobody actually knew that. So I liked how they chose this particular crime or this particular instance, this case, to have Hank kind of go, you know what? Yeah, holy crap. Maybe I have to look at this in an entirely different light now. And, you know, he has Nick as a Grimm to be able to help. So, of course, they had to do it against the clock, you know, and the whole idea of the guys getting... he's on death row and they only have so much time.
I have to say is there was no point in my mind where I thought they were really going to execute the guy. Like, the clock felt false to me. I didn't feel like they didn't need the clock.
My biggest thing is, why did they waste Jason Gedrick in such a small part?
That is weird.
Because he's not a superstar, but he is well-known, recognizable, had several failed TV shows for the most part.
Yeah.
Why put him in that role?
Yeah, because he didn't get to do much.
Seriously. It's like...
I kept waiting for him to break out or something or nothing.
Something.
Yeah. Or maybe he's going to come back and try to help Grimm's or something. I don't know. That was weird.
I thought the main plot line was just, you know, fairly... It wasn't awful. I liked that it was Hank-centric.
Yeah.
Boy, I really am over this thing with
Juliet and Renard. I'm actually the opposite.
Move it along. Nothing to see.
They are moving it along, and I like
that.
They
are, yeah.
Yeah, I like the fact that...
Them in the shop, with the spice shop, and now Monroe knows who they are, essentially.
Yeah. That's fantastic.
Pretty quick now.
I think that what's weird is Renard, who has been keeping track of... he's been keeping track of Nick, had no idea that Nick was hanging out with Monroe, or if he did, he just knew Monroe's name and didn't realize it was the same person. So then he brings her there, and it's just like, oops.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
I don't think he probably just had no idea that they were.
Yeah.
They were
obviously, or he would have never gone there.
Exactly.
So now everyone's busted. Because Monroe, he can't keep that a secret. Even though it's client privilege? He said he's got client privilege, but that's a hard secret.
Yeah, no, he doesn't have to keep it secret at all. And you know he won't, because it's Nick.
I know.
So, no, that it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But I was happy. I was like, yep, there he goes.
Except that Monroe doesn't know who Renard is. He knows what he looks like.
Put it together pretty quick.
Yeah, that's awesome. Like, I think the storyline did move because it's now to the point where Nick is about to find out they're actually looking for a cure, except apparently they can't be in the same room for longer than 5 seconds without making out.
What, seriously?
But that's a good point because I liked the fact that and you know, before they went to the spy shop, how Renard called Juliet and basically is like, hey, okay, apparently we can't not see each other or think about each other or whatever. So are you willing to try something to kind of resolve this? And she was like, okay. like she was good with it. It was like, okay, I like that. You know, that she's thinking, she realizes that something's weird or that something's not right. And so she's willing to do something about it. So I thought that was good. They made her not totally stupid, you know?
Yeah. So yeah, thumbs up for Grimm, right?
Yes. Yep.
All right. Next up is Fringe. And this week's episode was called Through the Looking Glass.
And what Walter found there.
Yes. That was a freaky world that he walked into.
The
pocket universe. And what was interesting is when he does get the tape and he puts it in and he leaves, I thought that was weird. And I was like, why is Walter doing this by himself? And what I thought he was doing was that he knew that Olivia and Peter were still grieving. And so he was trying to kind of take the weight off of them and do it himself. That's what I assumed he was doing. But what was interesting is his explanation was actually made more sense. He was like, no, I was being really arrogant and I was becoming that man that I don't want to be. And I was like, oh, okay. It's pretty good. What'd you guys think?
I thought it was crazy and I need to rewatch it because I'm like, what? this show is, I mean, you've got all the different versions of the universe and after Peter undoes himself from existence, then you have this new cosmology, but you still have the two prime universes, and now we have a pocket universe. It's like, what are you guys trying to do to us?
But, well, what was interesting is they were actually kind of confusing their timelines a little bit, because the little boy from the first universe we know, the little observer kid, they grab him, and I'm like, how would Walter even know about him? Because he didn't have that storyline happen.
Well, they addressed that, though, because they did have Walter being completely confused.
He was completely
confused. And you could say, well, maybe that's just his memory issues, but I think that because Peter brought up specifically, that maybe didn't happen for him.
Except that he knew the kid in the past. He knew who the kid was to put him in the pocket universe. So that's why I'm like, wait, what? So yeah. I'm kind of confused on
that. I mean,
that.
Because we never got like a revised history of what did or did not happen.
Exactly.
In the reconfigured, you know, I'll say cosmology instead of universe. But yeah, sometimes this show makes my brain hurt. It's like, and the whole notion of this guy being trapped here, and as soon as he's saying, oh, I've only been here a little while, it's like, no,
yeah.
You know, the weird thing is, since we don't know what the whole thing is with that radio and the transmitter and what they're supposed to get from it, and the fact that the boy is gone, my first thought, which is probably totally wrong, is that he's, what's his name, the observer that's like out to get them. like there's some sort of weird thing where like he went back and they didn't come for him, so now he's like the big bad observer.
I don't think so. I think the radio is that Donald took the kid, whoever Donald is, we don't know who that is, and right. That the transmitter stuck on a frequency so every once in a while he'll transmit on that frequency and see if they answer. So.
That would be cool too. But did you not love the fact that the symbols on the doors have been the glyphs this entire time?
Yes,
I did.
That was so cool.
I did notice that, and I was like, "Are they doing that on purpose?" Like,
oh yeah,
they didn't do the. Oh, yeah. Well, no, I knew they were doing that on purpose. I know that, but then they didn't do the little face thing. I was like, "Oh, where's the face?"
The face thing.
Well, it looks like it's a cloud that looks like a screaming face.
Oh, yeah, I know what you mean.
That one they didn't do.
Okay, but that one's hard off the door. Yeah, but those aren't. That one's not used, I don't think, for the glyphs for the code.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it is. It's one
is
of
it?
Them.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's they haven't used it in a while, but they have.
Okay,
used
that's
it.
Probably why I forgot. Okay.
Well, they didn't show all of them anyway. They just showed enough that you could look at it and go, oh, hey. Look.
Yeah, you're like
the glyphs.
Seahorse, apple. Yeah, the whole thing. Wow.
A little meta moment from Fringe.
it seems like there's a lot of meta in this episode to unpack, because the fact that you're quoting Lewis Carroll in the title.
Yeah.
Just, and I mean, I'd really like to go back and watch it to unpack it and like, whoa, what ties in? I mean, there's just so much there. It was atypical for an episode.
Right.
But there's something about these missions. Somebody, one of the online people has suggested that perhaps the missions are really for Peter, not that Walter, somehow Walter knew what Peter was going to do.
How would he know that it's in the past? It's not the future.
This is Fringe. Yeah. This is Fringe. But perhaps the missions on the videotapes are more for Peter's benefit, for him to gather shared experiences with the group. I don't know.
What's happening with Peter is really interesting, and they finally, in this episode, you know, decided to show what the fallout is going to be.
A little bit.
But I think again, what the observer said to him before he kills him is interesting. Is that, you know, he really has no idea. He's in way over his head.
Yep,
and he has no idea what's going on.
He made a rash, impulsive decision,
and he can't take it back.
And then when he's at the end, when Walter is like begging that, you know, keep me grounded, don't let me become that person that I could have become. And then when Peter starts to see him in like Matrix stuff, that was like,
he was like, oh no.
Maybe not the best person to ask to stay grounded.
Yeah, seriously.
He is, and the thing I also like is Olivia knows him well enough to realize something's wrong. And I'm like, this is what happens when you're around people this long. They know how to read you, and they can tell.
They know your tells.
They know when you're lying, and they know when you're not acting right. So next week is going to be Olivia trying to figure out what the heck is going on with Peter.
Yeah.
And I'm in.
I love that moment when she tells him, "Let me know what you're feeling. Let me, you know, help me help you."
Yes, because she's like, "You don't have to grieve by yourself. We can do this together." And I think that was probably what tore them apart last time, was they were doing this separately, and this time she's like, "Okay, we're gonna do this together, and then that'll bring us back together." So I like them as a couple. All right, but I think we're going to say thumbs up.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Thumbs up for Fringe. Oh,
yeah. How many more episodes are there?
Don't make me sad.
Not enough, but how
many? Well, all I know is that it ends in January. In January, they're going to do a 2-hour finale. So that's all I'm
going to.
And then it's gone. We've got to be about halfway through this run, though.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah.
So in January, exactly. They've already set the date for the finale. It's going to be in January.
Wow.
All right. Alright, so if you guys have any feedback, send it to tvcampfire@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter. We're on Facebook. You can listen to us on getthepointradio.com, Krypton Radio, iTunes, and Weedopolis. And we'll talk to you guys next week.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.